Hi, listeners. Are you a small business owner, an author, an artist, or have something worthy to promote? If so, we have an exciting new opportunity for you, the chance to promote your product on the podcast and in our social media. Just like PBS, our episodes will soon be sponsored by you, with fun ads, read by us, placed in our extensive catalog of episodes and on our engaging social media platforms for a period of time determined by the package you select. For more information about the three types of ad campaigns available, contact us at hello@poppreservationists.com or look for a link in the show notes of this episode. This is a great opportunity to reach a lot of ears and eyes of fellow Gen Xers and an easy way to have us help you keep on trucking.
Jesus Christ, superstar. This is the song that I fell in love with when I was a kid.
What's the next line?
Who in the world do you think you are?
No, I was like, who in the hell?
Who in the hell do you think you are?
Which I think I was like, you should not talk that way to Jesus.
Hello world, here's a song that we're singing. Come on, get happy. A whole lot of loving is what we'll be bringing. We'll make you happy.
Welcome to the Pop Culture Preservation Society, the podcast for people born in the big wheel generation who collected autographs, but not of famous people.
We believe our Gen X childhoods gave us unforgettable songs, stories, characters, and images. And if we don't talk about them, they'll disappear, like Marshall, Will, and Holly on a routine expedition.
And today, we'll be saving the records our parents bought after seeing Barbara Streisand, or Zero Mostel, or Marvin Hamlisch on The Johnny Carson Show. Today, we'll be talking about the Broadway musicals our parents listened to on the hi-fi stereo system in the living room.
I'm Carolyn.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Fanny Bryce. And I'm Michelle, and we are your pop culture preservationists.
Once, singular sensation.
Every little step she takes. Na 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 na. One, two, thrilling combination.
One smile. But I can't do it without going, and nobody else can do.
Of course you guys would be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the producer person now. I'm like smoking a cigarette. Telling the choreographer.
You're the Michael Douglas character in the movie. It was the most thrilling thing in the world when my daughter was, when Emily was in A Chorus Line in high school, and they learned the choreo to One.
I was like, you teach that to me immediately. Okay, pull myself together. Stop singing and pull myself together. Today's episode is a little bit different. Normally, we're talking about all the things that we had as children, our records, our books, the TV shows we loved to watch, possibly while our parents were still at work or making dinner or smoking Virginia Slims while they watered the lawn. It's always about us, right? But the things our parents liked were also a big part of our growing up because we only had one TV and we may have only had one stereo system in our house. But even if you had your own radio and your own turntable in your room, your parents didn't. Their turntable was in the living room, and whatever they were listening to, you were listening to too.
Yes.
Yes, definitely.
Yes, and that means for me, I was singing along with Vicky Carr and Robert Goulet and Barbara Streisand, Steve Lawrence and Edie Gourmet, Frank Sinatra, and the Clancy Brothers. That was a little Irish band, and I remember them. Picture the covers of all of these albums. And the Clancy Brothers were in their like Irish fisherman sweaters, and they looked like they could be doing an ad for Irish Spring soap.
Yeah,
and I just had the opportunity to sit and look at those covers while those, you know, albums were playing.
Yes.
And I knew they made my parents happy. So it was kind of always a happy time.
Yeah.
And it was not something that you chose. You didn't put on the Clancy Brothers. Your mom did. And then you looked at the record cover and enjoyed it. It was like they were providing us with this gift that they didn't even know. For me, that was the Seekers and Georgie Girl. That was my mom's album. But I sat there and I looked at that album cover all day long.
Mm-hmm.
But also, a huge percentage of my parents' records were Broadway musicals. Huge percentage.
Oh, yeah. We had a lot of musical albums, too. And I think I've told you guys before that my mom was a really, really beautiful singer. Fun fact, singing was her talent when she was a contestant in the Miss Grand Prairie pageant in the early 60s. Yeah. But she'd sing loudly and with just great passion to not just the musical soundtracks, but mostly and especially Barbara. But it was my mom who introduced me to my love of musicals. And I'm quite sure it was from a very early age, just by the absorption into my soul from listening to all those soundtracks.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think my mom would also then kind of tell me the story sometimes. So like we'd be listening and I'd maybe be looking at the cover and she'd say, yeah, this tells the story of, you know, the King of Siam, you know, and she kind of tells me the story of the king and I. And so it was everything that enveloped that moment of just the music playing, but my mom talking to me and how everything felt. It was just a really happy time when that music was playing.
I want to really hold on to that community aspect of music because I don't think there's anything more communal than a musical. And I think it's so interesting that Broadway is a particular place, right? These shows were being performed in a particular place. And some of them were turned into movies, and that's how we got to know some of them, but a lot of them were not. And yet still, our parents had these albums. Broadway was not in Minnesota, it was not in Texas, and it wasn't in Washington. But still, our parents knew and loved the latest Broadway craze. Even if they loved it so much that they would spend their hard-earned money to buy the cast recording of the album. I can't believe I don't remember this, but how did we get to know about the music coming out of Broadway in the pre-digital era?
Well, I think, you know, some shows probably like Ed Sullivan and shows that really showcased artists.
Merv Griffin.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then those kind of talk shows, Mike Douglas, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. I think that was some exposure. I think there might have been some in like some print media. I know I've talked a few times about those Saturday and Sunday inserts in the newspapers. And I feel like a lot of those might have been, you know, talked about the latest craze on Broadway. You know, a chorus line is here.
And a lot of these soundtracks had songs that charted on the radio.
That's so true. Yeah.
They would maybe hear one song that's a beautiful song, and then they would go get the album from that.
I totally forgot about the talk show piece of it. That is huge. That's huge, especially if it included somebody that they already knew and loved, like a Barbara Streisand or a Julie Andrews or somebody like that. And then they'd go and buy the cast recording without ever having seen the show. And then, of course, if you were lucky enough, you would get touring productions coming through your town. And one thing is for sure, this became so apparent to me while I was researching for this episode this week. Broadway musicals played in our homes trigger a lot of feelings, so many feelings. Why does the music from these shows give me such a lump in my throat?
I know, I'm raising my hand just because that for me, it definitely hits differently now.
Yeah.
When I remember the albums that were in heavy rotation in my house, because for those of you listening that don't know, my mom passed away in the fall of 2024. And I can still hear her singing. I mean, I can hear it perfectly in my head. And when I hear her singing and walking around the house, cleaning the house or whatever, in my memory, she's probably 40. You know, flipping around the house, just singing the top of her lungs. So the lump is especially large for me now when I'm thinking about these musicals. But to answer your question, generally, I think maybe it's because the songs, and listen, everyone, you have to play these songs in order.
Yeah,
it's very important to you know, preserve this like emotional ride you're going to be on, but it's because the songs tell a story, and it is often very much an emotional roller coaster of a story, a Broadway musical. So that could be one reason.
Yeah, you're right. When I was so frustrated this week while I was, I would oftentimes listen while I was dog walking and things like that. And so then I'm listening to Apple Music, and the songs would shuffle, or they would add in something new. They would give me a bonus track. It would be a cover by somebody else. I'm like, stop it. That is mm-hmm. not why I'm here. And then I would have to go home and thank God I have a turntable and I have records, so I could just put it on the turntable and listen to it the way that I did 50 years ago.
And you got to start with the overture, everyone. Do not skip past the overture. Even if you're like,
the overture.
I got to get to the lyrics. Oh, I got to get to my favorite.
No.
Shame on you.
Yes.
That's right. Because all of those are in the overture. Like, you'll hear those tunes and you get all excited.
Oh, the medley. Yes. I love the overture. Plus, the overture is what gives me all the nipple lightning.
Yes, totally. This is why when I go to a show, the overture begins and that's when I begin to cry.
Oh my God.
I begin to cry before the actors are even on the stage.
Can you imagine showing up late?
But you're right. It is so full and voluminous. Maybe that's what it is that I'm being enveloped by music in a way that I'm not with what I'm hearing on the radio. It's so heavy and textured and dramatic. Maybe it's the drama of it all, too. There's so much earnestness, which is funny. This is why Liam does not like musicals, except for Sound of Music. Thank God he likes Sound of Music. It's the earnestness of it all is very uncomfortable for him. And I think the earnestness is what makes me cry.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm. And on an aside, I love the word earnest and earnestness. And Kristen says it all the time. I feel like that should be a drinking game.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm thinking somebody would have just had to drink like six times in a row right in this sentence right before this, or the couple of sentences. But I agree with you. And I agree with what you said about being enveloped. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great word for what it feels like. You're kind of in it. It's around you. Mm-hmm. You're kind of part of it in a way that you're more of an observer in other kinds of music where you're on the outside mm-hmm. taking it in. But I feel like these Broadway songs, you are in it.
Mm-hmm.
You're in it. And then, like you said earlier, it's the massiveness of it all, the orchestra. So all those instruments coming together. And when I go see a musical, and I'm a huge fan of seeing musicals, but I'm a little bit picky. I want a big, old-fashioned, big, massive number somewhere mm-hmm. in my musical, right? I mean, I just about come out of my skin, right?
Yeah.
So those are the feelings too. It's one part the feelings that we now have because we're also remembering a lot of memories of our parents are playing into our memories. But if you throw us back to when we were children and are like, how did we have those big feelings then? I think it's just because we're the type of people, and many of our listeners as well, who this type of all of it coming together, right? The vocals, the music, we feel it and it's big feelings. It's big music. It's big. And mm-hmm. there's some people that just aren't, and that's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel sorry that you have to live your life without having those big feelings, but you do. They've got something else.
That is very true. There are some people who are very emotionally impacted by listening to music, and there are some people for whom it's just entertainment. And I think the three of us are people who cry when we listen to music. So mm-hmm. this is going to be a very emotional episode.
Yeah. It's been a very emotional, 3 days for
me. It really has. Unexpectedly so. Before we begin, we just have to recognize that the Broadway musicals that we know are a distinctly American thing. There is no Broadway equivalent in France, right? We have the West End in London, but that is renowned for theater, mm-hmm. Which is not the same as musicals. It's not the same as a Broadway musical. They certainly produce Broadway musicals, but they are borrowing from Broadway. This belongs to us, and we should be really proud of that. And in the 60s and the 70s, stage productions were changing. We'll talk about some of their very traditional Broadway fare today, but we'll also talk about some that had a distinctly different flavor from the lighthearted musical comedies or sentimental love stories that we were used to seeing and that our parents were used to seeing when they were growing up. In the 70s, we see things get very real. Musicals are asking us to think instead of just sitting back and being entertained. We see the introduction of the rock opera, starting with Hair in 1968, which some people say is a rock musical and not a rock opera, but whatever. Something new was in town. And then musicals start weaving in the 70s pop sensibilities into the song, so it sounds more like the songs that you hear on the radio. In 1969, The Fifth Dimension had a 6-week run at number one with, do you know what song? You guys know what song,
Aquarius.
Right?
I think it has to be.
Yes.
This is the dawning of the age.
Of Yes, it was their cover of the medley of songs from Hair, Aquarius, and Let the Sunshine In. It was one of the biggest songs of 1969. This is what musical theater is coming to us in the 70s. And when Andrew Lloyd Webber debuts on Broadway in 1971, it's like a new era has officially begun, right? And we're going to talk about it all today, all of it, by highlighting some of those records that filled our houses with music. So let's just start one by one. Carolyn, do you want to start with one of the records that was in your house?
I would be happy to. So I am going to start with the Broadway musical West Side Story. It's the album cover I remember so specifically. It is actually the soundtrack is not from the original Broadway production. It is from the film. And that's what my parents saw. So it has Natalie Wood, who played Maria, and the other guy, I don't know his name, that played Tony. And they're sitting on a fire escape. And I remember my mom explaining to me what a fire escape was. Like, I think that was my first introduction to what are these outside stairs on side of a brick building and what's going on. And then my parents, I think because of the whole New York City connection, they
because they lived just, there. They
knew
there.
Like people that could have been in the Jets and whatever. And
oh my God.
They would sing the songs and they would get into like the actions that would have been in the movie. Like I could see my dad doing the snapping thing. I'm snapping right now. So if you watch us on YouTube, you can see me trying to do the snapping
one of the
thing.
Sharks.
Yes. I'll tell you a few facts about West Side Story. Okay. It actually opened in 1957, the original Broadway production at the Winter Garden Theater in New York City. And we have the music. In this case, is by Leonard Bernstein and the lyrics by Stephen Sondheim. The storyline is inspired by Romeo and Juliet, and as I've already mentioned, it's set in New York City during the 1950s and rival gangs, the Jets, who were the white Americans, and the Sharks, the Puerto Ricans, are kind of these enemy gangs. And so we're following along the story, which, come to think of it now as I'm actually talking out loud, it's very pertinent today, too. I think there'd be a lot of lessons and things we can learn from the musical West Side Story. The musical is really known for this integration of music, dance, and the narrative. Do you guys remember some of the songs that are from?
Immediately, whenever I think of West Side Story, I think of Tonight, Tonight. Like, you have to sing it like that.
Tonight, Tonight, it all began tonight. I saw you and the world.
Loved it. Well, and I think of my mom singing it like that. And my mom, I think I've mentioned before, just she just idolized many people, but Natalie Wood as well. And so she loved it. When I was a sophomore in high school, we got to take dance as one of our like physical education electives. And we did our dance to When You're a Jet, You're a Jet, all the way from your first cigarette to your last dying day. And I was singing. This is like goes back to what we were just talking about, how some people grew up with musicals and some people not. And right when she started playing it, I'm singing the whole song. And we all like walked forward. And I remember we'd like we'd go, and if you're watching this on YouTube, I'm doing that. We'd say, from your first cigarette to your last dying day, and we'd like throw the cigarette. But I had people in my dance class going, how do you know these words? Like, you're just hearing it for the first time. And I said, because I grew up with this album in my house.
My dad would sing that entire song. And I remember being so impressed with how he knew all the words. Like, it didn't even have to be playing. Like, these were songs that my parents would be like, you know, I want to live in America.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
And we'd go in.
And would your dad
if we ever had a skirt on, I'd always
swish
be
it.
Like,
yes,
Rita Moreno singing America with that skirt. She's swishing the skirt.
Swishing it.
I like to be in America. Okay, by me in America. Everything free in America.
For a small fee in America.
Okay. So Natalie Wood, we said, starred in West Side Story, but she did not sing. All the
I have
songs.
The answer.
I know you probably do. So, Kristen, I'm going to ask you, whose voice was dubbed in for Natalie Wood?
That would be A, Marnie Nixon.
A. Marnie Nixon is correct.
We talked about it on a previous episode. Yes. Yeah.
We did. And she has a very famous offspring. That's how we almost brought it up.
Cynthia. Oh my God. Who is it?
Is it Cynthia?
It is?
No. That's not it.
Wait, who is it?
It's John Sebastian.
Close. It's closer to John Sebastian than it is to
Garth
Cynthia.
Williams. Vivian Vance.
These are not related.
It is Andrew Gold.
Richard. Oh.
Andrew Gold. Our lonely boy.
Oh my God.
That's right. God, you guys, we've been doing this now for so long that I'm forgetting. Now I'm getting Husker Dude
by my information.
By things we've talked about.
I'm as excited right now as the first time you told us. It's like you've never told us before, which means that Marnie Nixon brought home the little sister when Andrew Gold said, but you said I'd be the only one.
Right. Because that is based on a true story.
Yes. And Marnie Nixon was one of the nuns in Sound of Music.
Oh, that's right.
Yes.
Oh my God. Exactly. The fun facts just keep layering.
Well, she was also, her voice was dubbed in for Deborah Carr in The King and I and Audrey Hepburn in My Fair Lady.
I did not know that. Okay. And that poor woman, I hope she got paid a lot of money.
Yes.
Because
she did other performances under her own name. Okay. So it's not like she was this ghostwriter that no one ever knew, and she never got credit for
that. But it's not like her name is splashed on the album cover, because they want you to think it's Natalie Wood. So it's like in the fine print on the back of the album cover.
And I think I have like a kind of an icky feeling I get when I learned that it wasn't Natalie Wood singing. Because, of course, I'm staring at that album cover that I talked about, and you see her face, and she's so beautiful. And I probably caught snippets of the movie if it was ever on TV and my parents were watching it, and I knew who Natalie Wood was. And then I thought, well, that's not fair. Like, how can she be the star and someone else is singing? That's cheating, basically. Mm-hmm.
At the same time, think of this sounds so weird, but it is a gift nonetheless. How talented are you, Natalie Wood, if you can portray singing? She's portraying singing.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody else's voice. Like, is she lip syncing? I don't know, but I believed it. It looked good to me.
Oh, I did too. Hence why I was so disappointed when I found out it wasn't her.
Mm-hmm. I also think about those dance sequences. Those are so memorable. And that's exactly the kind of thing that you would see on Johnny Carson. They would take a whole dance sequence from a Broadway musical and showcase it for us, the American public, on late night TV. And you can that's why we all know the snaps.
Yeah.
Everybody knows the snaps. Whether you've seen the movie or the show, it doesn't matter. Jerome Robbins was the choreographer. He's, of course, probably one of the most well-known choreographers in history. I'm just going to throw that out there. I don't know. Please don't Google this, but I do believe that the choreography from West Side Story was the first choreography to be copyrighted.
Oh, I feel like I've heard that too.
I do believe.
Wow. I've never thought about choreography being copywritten, righted.
Mm-hmm. And that's all preserved in his archives. So when you want to do that choreography, you have to get permission from the Jerome Robbins estate.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Learn something new every day.
Yeah. It's that important. It is iconic choreography. Everybody knows it. Okay, Michelle, it's your turn. What do you have first?
Okay, well, my first one is, it's pretty obvious. but my first pick is Funny Girl.
'Cause I'm the greatest star. I am by far, but no one knows it.
So the Funny Girl cast album peaked at number 2 on the Billboard 200 in June 1964, and it had sold 250,000 copies by the following month.
Now,
the recording went on to beat Fiddler on the Roof and Hello Dolly to win the Grammy for Best Original Cast Show Album.
Wow.
And that's the one that I have here. This is my mom's.
I have such memories of that. That is so iconic.
This is from my mom. I brought like 28 Barbara records home with me when we cleaned out her place. And has
the angels
gatefold.
Are singing. Oh. Yeah. Because it is a what? Well, what is it again, Michelle? What kind of album is it again?
Oh, it's like an open. It's like a gatefold.
It's a gatefold. I mean, well, I love gatefolds.
Carolyn loves her gatefolds.
Yeah. I think all of those albums, those soundtracks from those Broadway shows were gatefolds. Perhaps that's why I love them so much.
So much information. Yeah.
So many pictures. Yes. Mm-hmm. And
that's why we spent so much time with them.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Michelle, you need to take that art from that album cover and put it on your wall.
Yeah, it's so, so good. Beautiful. The upside down with the fun. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, in our house my entire life, there was a Barbara album playing about 90% of the time. But here's the thing. My memories of Funny Girl, the Funny Girl soundtrack, aren't as much from hearing my mom play it or even sing the songs. It's me. It's all me. Oh. I was a bit obsessed with this soundtrack from about first grade to fourth grade. And I hadn't seen the musical, but the inside of the album when it opens tells the whole story. And those pictures, I would just study those pictures and I would read about the story. And of course, my mom would tell me the story. I would spend hours and hours, you guys, singing all the songs, acting them out. I mean, God bless life pre-internet. Right? So that we have memories like this, like things we did as children. Mm-hmm. And I really latched on to I'm the Greatest Star. So much so that I believe it was in third grade, because I can remember the street I lived on, where we had a little neighborhood talent show. We sold tickets to all our neighbors. And I performed I'm the Greatest Star. I performed Secondhand Rose. Oh. And along with my magic act, naturally. I was an amateur magician. But I remember nailing the New York accent. Like I'd say, listen, I got 36 expressions, sweet as pie to tough as leather. And then I would do the whole like, and can't you see to look at me that I'm a natural Camille. And then my second favorite song to sing, which is actually not on this soundtrack, was Secondhand Rose. And that's definitely my other favorite Barbara song to perform, because I love the whole like, even Jake the plumber, he's the man I adore. He had the nerve to tell me he's been married before. Everyone knows that. Anyway, I remember my mom getting such a kick at this little talent show that I was like, everybody was coming out twirling the baton or doing cartwheels, and I was singing Barbara Streisand. She was very proud. So Secondhand Rose is not included on this 1964 Broadway soundtrack, but Barbara Streisand sang it in her 1965 TV special called My Name is Barbara.
Yep.
So it was on one of the two companion albums from that special. And then she went on to include the song in the 1968 movie. And you guys, I listened to the soundtrack in its entirety yesterday. And it's the first Barbara I've been able to listen to since my mom died in September. And had a real good cry. And it was like no time had passed, though. I mean, the song, I'm the Greatest Star, it has a lot of lyrics. And every single one of them just rolled out of some weird crevice in my brain. God. And I was just singing along. And then when I heard Jean Stapleton, who played Mrs. Strakosch, sing If a girl isn't pretty like a Miss Atlantic City, you know, my head, I think,
that
exploded.
Was very good. That was a very good Jean Stapleton.
I had not thought of that song in her voice in decades.
Fanny, when people pay good money in the theater, especially the male element, they want something to look at. If a girl isn't pretty like a Miss Atlantic City, all she gets in life is pity and a pat.
And then People came on, and that's when I just lost it. I was typing notes for this episode, and when People came on, I'm not exaggerating. I could smell my mom as I listened to that song. God. And you guys, it's like this is the power of music and the beauty of music. It is truly like my mom is contained in all Barbara songs full. And it's why I haven't been able to really listen to them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I could smell, and like I said, not 80-year-old mom.
That's a different smell.
I didn't want to smell her. No, but you know how your mom always had. For my mom, it was Oscar de la Renta perfume. Mm-hmm. It was just her house, her clothes had a certain smell. And as I was listening to People, I had to stop typing. I had to just let myself feel. I had to cry.
I had to have all of the senses. And I was really happy to have had that opportunity. Carolyn, you talk about that a lot, the mm-hmm. gifts that this podcast gives us. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have listened to that because I would have been like, nope, I'm still, you guys, I live very well in my denial and unacceptance of my mom having died. And so I've just been pushing shit like that away, like Barbara songs, Barbara mm-hmm. albums. And mm-hmm. so I had to for this episode. And I was really ultimately grateful.
Oh, that's beautiful.
That is beautiful.
It is. It's just, yeah. it's what we always talk about, that these things can transport us. And what you had there was a transporting experience, literally. Mm-hmm. You were literally transported mm-hmm. basically to a different dimension because your mom doesn't live in this dimension. Mm-mm. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. I'm happy for you.
Thank you.
People who need people are the luckiest people in the world.
I'm going to start with the 70th of any show ever produced in history, in my humble opinion. And that is what was our very first taste of Andrew Lloyd Webber in his first ever production for Broadway in 1970. And that is Jesus Christ Superstar.
Every time I look at you, I don't understand why you let the things you did get so out of hand. You'd have managed better if you'd had it planned. Now why'd you choose such a backward time in such a strange land?
Jesus Christ Superstar Superstar tells the biblical story of the clash between Jesus and Judas and how Judas doesn't like this new direction that Jesus is going in. And it lets you into the psychology of all of the characters in the story of Jesus's death and resurrection, which the Bible doesn't really do so much. So it's a bit of speculation. And it's also super controversial, both from the Bible purists and also because there is some anti-Semitism and how those various roles are portrayed. This production was pushing buttons all over the place. And it is bonkers. This show is bonkers. If you want to feel the 70s, watch the 1973 movie version directed by Norman Jewison and filmed in Israel. I made my husband watch it recently, and he was like, what is even happening right now? So just picture this. This is how the movie opens. So, you know, you picture opening your Bibles to read about Jesus, and what you see on the screen is a school bus full of disciples. They're like on their way to school, and they're all getting off at their stop, which is in the middle of the desert, and it sounds like this.
Very aggressive.
Yeah, it's very aggressive. Just reading my Bible. It's very aggressive. But then Mike really lost it when the disciples start singing this song out in the desert. What's the buzz? Tell me what is happening. What's the buzz? Tell me what is happening. What's the buzz? Tell me what is happening. And Jesus.
It's so 70s.
It's so 70s in all of their like desert garb and everything. And Mike is like almost, he's going to walk out. I'm like, no, stay. Please stay.
I can't believe he didn't ever see that in school. Like, I remember watching, because I know Mike went to Catholic school.
Yeah.
And we watched it always like around Lent.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, that and Godspell.
It's so bonkers. It is so bonkers. And strangely enough, the album, Jesus Christ Superstar, came before the show.
This is a really
strange chicken or egg situation. No one wanted to stage this production because it's bonkers. Oh. So they made Andrew Lloyd Webber et al. They made a weird, wacky concept album instead. They're like, screw them. We're not going to do a show. We're just going to do this album, Jesus Christ Superstar. And it was a hit, a huge hit. The album reached number one with no show. Then they're like, oh, okay. We'll do a stage show. And they quickly bankrolled the show and they debuted it in 1971. So album 1970, it charted in 1971. Here comes the show in 1971. And then the movie comes in 1973. The album also released several chart hits, including Superstar. Jesus mm-hmm. Christ, Superstar. This is the song that I fell in love with when I was a kid.
What's the next same, line? Same. What's that next line?
Who this is, okay, in the world do you think you are?
No, I was like, who in the hell? Who
that's what
in
I
the
said.
Hell do you think you are? Which I think I was like, you should not talk that way to Jesus.
Is that really what the words are?
No, it's not even close.
Because I remember thinking that I was getting away with something. Like I knew those weren't the words, but I'm saying them anyway.
Isn't that funny?
Yes.
Okay, so we both thought that. And yes. I sang it all the time. No, though I was just listening to it. Those words are not in the song.
What are they?
Jesus Christ, Superstar. Do you think you're what they say you are? Jesus
It's just so, so 70s. Who in the hell do you think you are, Jesus? Even though that's not what they say.
Even though, yeah.
But that's kind of what the movie is about. This song sounded like the way I wanted my life to be. Picture the kids dancing on Electric Company. That's mm-hmm. what kind of music yes. this is with mm-hmm. your Bibles. And there's also another one of the hits that came from this album is this very familiar tune, which was also a chart topper, sung very famously by Mary Magdalene about Jesus, which is,
I don't know how to love him.
But you all thought it was Helen Reddy singing about her amazing boyfriend, but no, it was Mary Magdalene singing about Jesus. Actually, Helen Reddy was never in the stage production of Jesus Christ Superstar.
Really?
No, she's not Mary Magdalene. I just made these vast assumptions that she was Mary Magdalene. But she just recorded her own version mm-hmm. of the song in 1971. And it totally launched her career. A string of wow. Helen Reddy hits came after that one. That was the song that gave us Helen Reddy. The person who did sing that song as Mary Magdalene in both the original Broadway production and in the movie was Yvonne Elliman, who also gave us, do you know what song she gave us?
Yeah, yeah, it's some. Yeah, you do. It's mm-hmm.
You do.
Grease. I mean, not Grease. Saturday Night
If
Fever.
I can't have you, yeah. I don't want nobody, baby. If I can't have you, that is
you're
Yvonne Elliman.
Sounding.
So it's like Mary Magdalene was in Saturday Night Fever. It's the same, right?
Naturally. Yeah.
Naturally. That's
in
a very
70s,
good theory.
Anything is possible.
Anything goes in the 70s.
I don't know how to love.
But here's the best nugget I've got for you. This is so good. And I never knew this until I watched it recently. I really love to read credits. It drives people crazy. But I do not leave the movie theater mm-hmm. until I've read every word as fast as I can. So we're sitting there watching the credits of Jesus Christ Superstar, and I catch a name really quickly. I'm like, oh, rewind. I see a name that I recognize. And I see this name, and I'm like, no, it cannot be the same. It can't be the same. But I did a little Googling, and it is the same. I'm going to say this name to you, and you tell me who this person is. Darcel Leonard Wynn.
Darcel.
You're going to die. You're going to die.
Do they have another name that they go by? That
yes.
We know them?
Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're simply known as Darcel.
That doesn't help.
Michelle and I are just like, doesn't help.
All right, okay. I'm going to tell you.
I'm thinking somebody from Electric Company or.
No, nope. I was thinking Zoom. Someone okay. Sesame Street. And then nope. I was like, no, we just did read. I just yeah. re-listened to those Sesame Street episodes
okay,
and that's not a name.
Or maybe a Solid Gold Dancer, but no, that
it's a Solid Gold Dancer.
That's what I was thinking.
It's a Solid Gold what? Dancer. Ding, 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 ding. You did it. Ding, 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 ding.
Is it a she?
Yes, Darcel is the one with the long braids.
Oh, I've communicated with
Darcel. Yes.
But when you said Leonard, I went to a guy in my head.
Nope.
So, oh yeah, Darcel. Hey.
Darcel. Darcel was in Jesus Christ Superstar as woman.
As woman.
As woman. Mm-hmm. So I found the clip. You can see Darcel just shaking her groove thing in the desert.
If you'd come today, you could have reached the whole nation. Israel in 4 BC had no mass communication.
Don't you get me wrong.
Jesus Christ, who are
Okay, the second musical I want to talk about is one that I chose particularly for a moment and a memory that I have that's associated with my dad so, so deeply. I'm not even sure if I followed the rules in picking this musical, but I had to because it's such a distinct memory. Okay, with that being said, first let me give you a quick, did I say what it was yet?
No.
No. Oh, okay. This would be the Rodgers and Hammerstein classic Carousel. Let me give you a little synopsis of the musical, okay? It's a romantic musical drama set in the picturesque coastal town of Boothbay Harbor, Maine in 1873. And it tells the story of Billy Bigelow, a charming but troubled carnival barker, and Julie Jordan, a quiet mill worker. Okay, whatever mill workers are. After a whirlwind romance and marriage, Billy struggles to provide for his family and makes a desperate choice that leads to tragedy. And from the afterlife, he is given a chance to return to Earth for one day to make things right, particularly for his daughter, whom he never knew. So that sets up what this musical is for you guys, okay? It was the second musical by Rodgers and Hammerstein, and it was a quick follow-up on their groundbreaking success, Oklahoma. The Broadway production premiered on April 19th, 1945 at the Majestic Theater. So this particular Broadway musical really broke theater norms because it integrated these songs so deeply into the shows and really showed the character development as part of the song. That's what propelled the character and how you got to see them change and grow over time. It also included a nearly 12-minute bench scene, which was considered a milestone in music storytelling. It is when they sing If I Loved You, which is one of the most beautiful songs.
If I loved you, words wouldn't come in an easy way. Round in circles I'd go.
So the signature songs, some you might remember from Carousel. If I Loved You is one. How about June is busting out all over? Love that one. And then, of course, there is the iconic anthem of hope, You'll Never Walk Alone. Yes, that one.
When you walk through a storm, hold your head up high and don't be afraid of the dark.
There's a big moment. There's a big moment.
A huge, huge moment. So in 1956, the Broadway production was made into a musical. Okay, so if you remember, we've got Gordon McRae as Billy Bigelow.
Oh my gosh.
He previously starred in Oklahoma, as did his beautiful co-star Shirley Jones. It always struck me that it was the same couple. Like, it was hard for me to separate. Like, these are two totally different movies, two totally different, like, time periods, and yet it's the guy and the girl from Oklahoma. Like, I think I always thought of them as the Oklahoma characters. So my interest, I guess, initially in this musical was piqued when I'd be watching the Jerry Lewis MDA telethon. And at the end of every Jerry Lewis telethon, if you remember, Jerry Lewis would sing When You Walk Through
Heaven. I forgot.
And they would always, he and Ed McMahon would kind of have this bet as to whether or not he could get through it kind of without crying.
Yes. Yeah.
And I always wanted him to cry. I'm like, is he crying yet? Is he crying yet?
Well, and besides, he's like so tired.
Oh, he's so tired. He's so got a cigarette.
His tie's open. Yeah. Yes.
That's right.
We should do an episode sometimes that airs around
Labor Day. That's right.
Yes. I have a fond feeling in my heart for that. We've talked before about like I did the McDonald's Carnival. Yep. I sent
that's
away
right.
for
it.
For that.
We're going to do that. We have to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was just such a great memory. And then I remember my mom saying, oh, that song comes from a musical called Carousel, and your dad loves that musical. And when that song plays in that musical, your dad, the first time he saw the movie, your dad cried, like really cried. And so I was like, my dad cried and Jerry Lewis is crying? Like, what is so great about this song? And so one day, I must have been in high school, this movie must have been on like a Saturday afternoon, one of those like $1 million movie things. And my parents call me down. They're like, Carousel is on. You've got to watch it with us. So the epic scene that we're talking about, it's the finale. We'll include a link to that final scene in our show notes. But basically, Billy Bigelow, who plays Shirley Jones's husband, doesn't know that he has a daughter. Okay. His daughter is born after he dies in this botched robbery attempt, kind of a thing. That's not important. Just know he's dead. He's not there. His daughter's graduating. Peter and the people up in heaven say, you can go down like one time and be there, but like as an angel, like one of those kind of like the littlest angel where he's there, but they don't know he's there. And so that's already heartbreaking. And the song is playing while that is happening. And so he's watching his daughter, and then he's like kneeling down next to Shirley Jones, who's sitting in a chair watching the graduation. And she's just looking up, you know, you could just see her eyes, and he's right there. So that's really good acting that she wasn't like, you know what I'm saying? She's not reacting to him being right there. He's so close, and her eyes are filling up. And then everyone starts singing the song. So talk about like crescendo and all of that. So everybody that's at the graduation, and then he has to walk away. Then he walks to the beach, and he kind of turns back one last time. And that song is still playing. And then, of course, at this point, I'm kind of crying when I'm watching the end of this movie in my little panel den. My dad is a little bit teary. I remember so distinctly getting up from the floor, walking over to him. He's reclining in this like tweedy recliner rocker thing we had, which was very ugly. And I just hugged him so, so, so hard and just told him how much I loved him. Because now I realized why he cried the first time he had seen it. It's his father who wasn't there to watch his daughter graduate. And then just this just wave of emotion came over me, and I just held on to him so tightly, and I couldn't even really talk. So that is why I chose Carousel.
Okay, now that you're all crying, I need you to dry your tears and listen to this very unusual announcement. We've run into a snag. In 5 years of this podcast, 230 plus episodes, this has never happened. But today is the day. Carolyn, who is our producer and editor, is stuck on an airplane. She is sitting on the tarmac as we speak, a prisoner in a metal tube for hours without access to her editing equipment. And for the first time in the history of this podcast, she's not going to make it in time to finish the episode and get it uploaded before midnight. That is just how time works. This, I guess, is one of the downsides of being an independent podcast. We don't have a team of editors to call on in a pinch. It's just Carolyn. And yet, we wouldn't have it any other way. And we also know that you all have our backs and you are here for us without judgment. So thank you for that. And so we've decided to give you just the first half of the episode, the done half, today, and bring you the second half next week when Carolyn can get off that damn plane. And I can't help but wonder if this is the universe saying you need to end this episode with the story about Carolyn hugging her dad during You'll Never Walk Alone. People will be crying too hard to listen to whatever comes next. And so hold those feelings close and come back next week for the conclusion of A Chorus Line of Musicals from our 1970s record cabinets. Thank you for understanding. Thanks for sticking with us. And we will see you next week.
The information, opinions, and comments expressed on the Pop Culture Preservation Society podcast belong solely to Carolyn, the Crushologist, and Hello Newman, and are in no way representative of our employers or affiliates. And though we truly believe we are always right, there is always a first time. The PCPS is written, produced, and recorded in Minneapolis, Minnesota, home of the fictional WJM Studios and our beloved Mary Richards. Nanu Nanu, keep on truckin', and may the force be with you.
Hi, listeners. Are you a small business owner, an author, an artist, or have something worthy to promote? If so, we have an exciting new opportunity for you, the chance to promote your product on the podcast and in our social media. Just like PBS, our episodes will soon be sponsored by you, with fun ads, read by us, placed in our extensive catalog of episodes and on our engaging social media platforms for a period of time determined by the package you select. For more information about the three types of ad campaigns available, contact us at hello@poppreservationists.com or look for a link in the show notes of this episode. This is a great opportunity to reach a lot of ears and eyes of fellow Gen Xers and an easy way to have us help you keep on truckin'.